Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How does your family's heritage play into who you become? And what happens when that heritage spans two continents and two cultures that, on the surface at least, could not be more different from one another? In that case, you might turn out a bit like memoirist Firuzeh Dumas. Her first book, Funny in Farsi, was a finalist for the Thurber Prize. Her new memoir plumbs more of her family's life in both Iran and California, from her father's love of velour tracksuits and free birthday cake to her own insatiable desire for French fries, heaped lovingly on her plate by an elderly friend not in Southern California, but in Iran. Now a highly sought-after speaker, Dumas works hard to spread not just her own stories, but her passionate belief that the similarities between human beings will always outweigh the differences. Firuzeh Dumas' latest book is called Laughing Without an Accent, Adventures of an Iranian American at Home and Abroad. Firuzeh, welcome to Think.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
You went, in some ways, from being really the ultimate outsider to becoming this unofficial liaison between American and Iranian culture. Does that role present challenges for you?
Well, it does. It always has, because when we first came here in 1972, we ended up in Whittier, California. And at that time, we discovered that nobody had heard of Iran. We would tell people where we're from, and they would just look at us and say, well, where is that? And, you know, we'd give all kind of clues like, well, you know, it's between Iraq and Afghanistan. Of course, this was 1972. So this didn't mean anything then. And, you know, we just got to the point where we'd say, all right, you know where Russia and Japan are. You know, we're in the neighborhood. But, you know, so that was the challenge initially. But then when, you know, when the Iranian Revolution happened and when a group of Americans were taken hostage in the embassy in Tehran, then the challenge came in explaining that, no, Iranians are not anti-American. This is a group of terrorists that have done this. And then now the challenge, of course, is having somebody like President Ahmadinejad, who every time he opens his mouth, he destroys bridges. So, you know, I try to build bridges, but I cannot build them as fast as this man destroys them. So this is my challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like a challenge. And one of the things that makes you crazy is that people assume that, when they're at home, Iranians talk about either politics or religion all the time.
Well, you got that right, Chris. I mean, I think people just assume that the Islam is our daily topic of conversation. And in fact, every Iranian that I know is a secular Muslim. So religion actually plays no role in their life whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Your dad went to Texas A&M in the 1950s. Can you talk about his memories of that time?
Oh, my gosh. This was the single biggest turning event in my father's life. My father was from a poor family, but he was a very good student. And in the early 50s, he applied for a Fulbright scholarship. And everybody said, you're not going to get this, cousin. This is only for rich people. And he actually got a Fulbright. He ended up in Texas A&M for a year. It absolutely changed his life. He fell in love with democracy and Jell-O and ham. That's a whole other story. But after that, his dream was to come to America and have his children be educated here. And the one thing he kept saying is that, you know, in America, it doesn't matter if you're poor or rich. You can actually become the best version of yourself.
And your dad would actually tell stories about the cafeteria and all the kinds of Jell-O that they had there.
He was very impressed by the selection of food in the cafeteria. And his descriptions would just make you think it was the best thing on the planet. You know, he'd say, you know, you get this clean tray, and you walk down, you take whatever you want, and there's red Jell-O, and there's yellow Jell-O, and there's green. And we would just listen to these stories and just think, wow.
So initially, 1972, when your dad said, okay, we're going to the U.S. for a couple of years, what do you remember what you expected at that age?
Oh, absolutely. We were thrilled. I mean, we were thrilled. Because you always hear stories about America when you're in Iran. And we just could not wait to get here. And I was 7 years old, and I didn't speak any English. And I couldn't wait to get here because I knew that this is where all the cartoons came from.
Oh, sure. So that was your exposure to American culture.
Exactly.
So what was your story when you got back to Iran? You know, your dad had the standard things that he would tell everybody about America. What were the things that you pointed out to your friends on the playground?
Well, I used to talk all the time about Disneyland and just all the amusement parks and also about the supermarkets. You know, I would tell them, you know, in America, you don't just have cornflakes. You know, and I would name all the cereals that I could remember. And people would look at me and say, well, what are these? And I go, well, you know, one is round, you know, one has this. And, you know, we just don't have that many choices in Iran, product choices.
So were you sort of disappointed when you got back to Iran? Obviously, there were things there that you loved, but did you notice the poverty more than you had before?
When I lived in Iran, it wasn't so much the poverty because, you know, I lived in cities, so mm-hmm. it wasn't that the poverty wasn't something I saw on a daily basis. What I missed the most about America were two things. One was the public library, because that was one thing I discovered in America. And the other thing was Girl Scouts. I loved that there was a program that was just for girls.
You wrote about the library. You didn't believe. I guess your brother came home and told you that it existed, and you said, that's not true. Nobody will lend you a book.
Right. My second grade teacher, Mrs. Sandberg, actually called our house one day and said to my father, you know, Mr. Jazieri, I've noticed your daughter loves to read. You need to take her to the library. And I'd never been to a library in my life. So my brother ended up being given the task of taking me there, and he's 7 years older than I am. And when we were walking there, he explained to me that a library is a place where they let you borrow books. And I remember thinking, he's such an idiot. You can't borrow anything anywhere. You have to pay for things. And in fact, I had my coin purse with me. So when we got to the library, we went into this room, and it was just filled with children's books. And I went and I picked the smallest book because I figured that I could afford that one. And when I went to pay, you know, the lady made us fill out this sheet of paper, and I thought, wow, this is a complicated transaction. And then she gave me this card, and she said, bring the book back in 2 weeks. And I was shocked. I thought, who thought of these libraries?
One of the things that comes up and has come up throughout your life is the idea that some kinds of humor are universal mm-hmm. and some things are really culturally specific. And there's nuance even there. Mm-hmm. For example, you write about Carol Burnett and right. watching that when you were a kid.
Right. When we came here in 1972, our window to America was television. And there were, in the 70s, you know, you had the Carol Burnett show, you had the Bob Hope specials, Tony Orlando and Don, Flip Wilson. And of course, we didn't speak English all that well. We were learning English, and the idea of American humor was so foreign to us. And Carol Burnett used to have this part of her show where she would do what she called a Tarzan yell.
Right.
And we never understood why that was funny. We would just watch this. And people were just rolling over themselves, you know, in laughter, and we still don't get it.
But then there were other things on that show that you thought were hilarious.
Right. Like we always thought Harvey Korman, who just passed away. Yeah, very recently. We thought, you know, he was so funny. And wait, did Harvey Korman just...
Was it Tim Conway?
Which one? One of them just recently passed away, and I don't want to make sure I don't get the wrong one.
It was Harvey Korman.
Okay. Yes, and Tim Conway, they were so funny. And I mean, because their act was sort of the classic, like, tall man, short man gig. And that always, you know, the straight man, funny man, that's universal, I think.
Yeah, translation of the book has been an issue for you, and it's also sort of a cultural thing. Like, you wrote that your dad has a receding hairline, maybe in the first book, and the translator described that as his bald head, and your dad was very offended by that.
He said there's a huge difference between a receding hairline and a bald head.
So nuance is like the first thing to go.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. No, translating humor is actually one of the hardest things to translate, because mm-hmm. you often have to find the equivalent. Because, like, you know, one of the things I mentioned in the book is, like, the pie throwing.
Yeah.
You know, a pie thrown in someone's face in any country in the world is not funny. And even in this country, I don't get that one either. But, you know, you can't translate that.
Yeah. In other words, some people will look at that and think, why are they wasting a pie? There's
people
starving. I know. Let's
eat the pie.
Right. So do you think that lack of nuance is a greater issue in cultural clashes than people tend to recognize?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's just misunderstandings all over the place. And also, I think one of the issues in this country is that people often watch the evening news to learn about the world. That is the biggest problem, because all you're seeing on the news is the worst of every country.
Right.
And I find that Americans, you know, first when we came here in the early 70s, they didn't know anything about Iran. They didn't know where it was. They never heard of it. I prefer that to what I encounter nowadays, which is people who have heard of Iran because of, you know, what President Ahmadinejad says or because of the hostages, and then they feel like they know Iran. So it's like, no, you don't know Iran. There's so much more than that. And, you know, I think that's a problem, that we're not, you know, people don't have the opportunity to learn about the world in any way in depth. So you're just getting this, you know, 2 minutes on the news, the worst of every country. And imagine if that's how people judged America, by just what's on the evening news about America.
One of the things you did, you have a one-woman show, and you wanted to use that Vince Vance sort of novelty song.
Right.
Can you talk about that?
Well, for some of your listeners who might remember, back in 1980, there was this horrible song that they played all the time on the radio. It was one of the top hits of 1980, and it was a song that was sung to the tune of the Beach Boys song Barbara Ann. Mm-hmm. And it was bom 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 Ann, bom 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 Ann. And I had a one woman show a couple years ago, and I wanted to find that song because I wanted to play it because it just encapsulated my horror during that period. And I found, thanks to the internet, I found the person who had made the song, and there was a phone number. So I called, and this woman answered the phone, and the person's name is Vince Vance and the Valiants, the band who play the song. And this woman said, you know, Vince Vance and the Valiants fan club. And I said, hi, I'd like a copy of Bomb Iran. And she said, well, and that's how they pronounce it, by the way.
Iran instead of
Iran,
Iran.
Yeah, Bomb mm-hmm. Iran. So she said, well, I can't find it. And I said, well, no, I have a one-woman show. I'm Iranian. I really need it. And she said, you're Iranian and you want a copy of Bomb Iran? And I said, yes, it's for a show. It's to make a point. And then there was this long pause, and I could hear her talking to somebody. And then this man answered the phone, and I just said, is this Vince Vance? And he said, yes, it is. And then he started apologizing to me. Hmm. And, I mean, this was a very unexpected twist. And he was just saying that, you know, he'd written the song really just as a reaction to what had happened, you know, with the failed rescue effort of the hostages. And it was just a reaction to the Ayatollah. He didn't mean it about the people of Iran. And he went on and on and on, and you know, it was a surprise. Unfortunately, that song has come back.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's so interesting, too, that, you know, you can think about someone like Vince Vance suddenly having a conscience about this, but once something has been created, it's out there.
Right, right. He even said that at one of his events, like, he had the KKK show up in support of him. And he said that was certainly not anything he had intended.
You had a really good response to your first book, but there were some purists who were bothered by the fact that you used the word Farsi in the title rather than Persian.
That's true. Well, first of all, the title Funny in Farsi is not one that I chose. And in fact, I have fought against it as much as I could. But as you can see, I didn't win that battle. And so when the book came out, I would get these emails, these long emails from some Iranians saying, you know, you've done us a great disservice because our language is called Persian, and now you're spreading this misinformation with the title of your book. And this is one of those debates. You know, if you put 100 Iranians in a room and bring up this topic, 50 will say it's called Farsi, 50 will say it's called Persian, and nobody will reach any kind of agreement. Mm-hmm. So,
and you make the point that it's like me saying I speak Espanol. That's not the English version of the word Farsi is Persian.
Right. So if I'm speaking English, what I should say correctly is I speak Persian. Mm-hmm. But even that Iranians don't agree on. So I would just say that is a topic worth avoiding.
Well, it's got to be hard, again, for you in this idea that people now look to you as being able to answer every question they have and explain every paradox.
Well, and I'm the first to say I certainly do not have all the answers, and I only speak on behalf of myself. So that's, you know, I'm definitely make that point. But, you know, the one thing, though, that I do is I simply share my experience as an Iranian immigrant to this country.
Firuzeh Dumas is my guest. Her book is called Laughing Without an Accent. Your kids have read the book?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And do they sort of edit as you go along, or you don't give it to them until you're
no,
all done?
They are actually my best editors. My two oldest, who are 16 and 13, they read everything I write. And they always give me great comments, and they're free, so I use them.
Firuzeh Dumas is with us. We'll return in just a moment to our conversation. Her new book is called Laughing Without an Accent, Adventures of an Iranian American at Home and Abroad. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to us at think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults, offering summer escapes from the everyday. Short courses start in June. Curious? Details at smu.edu/think.
You
You are listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Firozeh Dumas. Her new book is called Laughing Without an Accent, Adventures of an Iranian American at Home and Abroad. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or by sending email to think@kera.org. Firozeh, it's really interesting because you say the only time in your life when you have really felt like a foreigner was, of all places, when you were at college.
Right. You know, I went to UC Berkeley, and when I arrived there, the whole, you know, there's a culture of drinking in college, and not just drinking alcohol, but really drinking a lot of alcohol. And it's such a big part of the culture in college. And, you know, that was something so foreign to me, and I was really surprised that it was just so prevalent.
Yeah, and it wasn't something that had been proscribed for you. Your father said, if you want to try it, go ahead, but do it with me and all that.
My dad is an incredibly, I think, enlightened man when it comes to being a parent, because early on he said, you know, if you ever want to try alcohol, that's fine. Just do it at home with me here.
And he said, I'll buy whatever you want to taste.
Right. He was like, he goes, I'll buy it. But, you know, that took away, like, the whole rush. I mean, I think people like drinks because it's, you know, it's forbidden. Mm-hmm. And he immediately ruined that for me.
1-800-933-5372. I'm going to have to keep that trick in mind for my own kids. Let's speak to John in Richardson. Hi, John.
Hi. As an Aggie, I was interested to hear that the author's father had attended A&M, and now with A&M routinely being voted one of the most top 10 conservative schools in the nation, I was wondering what her family's perspective was on the school now, you know, maybe how it compares with her father's recollection of the way things were back when he was there, and I'm assuming he was in the Corps because of the year that he was there. And I was also wondering what the author was said to her dad when Cal beat A&M in the Holiday Bowl.
Well, you know, when my father was at Texas A&M in 1953, and he truly had nothing but fond memories of how welcoming people were to him, and how, you know, people went out of their way to welcome him and the other students, the other international students. So I think he would encounter a very different school if he had been a Fulbright scholar this year. But, you know, luckily he has his good memories to hang on to. And I'd like to think, too, that in university environments, no matter what is going on in the world, that people understand that does not define a whole of a nation.
So,
and as far as the football question, you know, I hate to say it, but we don't follow football. I don't even know the rules of American football. So I apologize for that, because I know it's big in Texas.
Well, we'll just assume that somebody's happy that
I do barbecue. Okay, so I have that in common with Texas.
Meanwhile, your husband is French and he's Christian. Can you talk about how he sort of gets along within your family?
Well, you know, my family, we're all secular Muslims. So, and my husband, you know, he's Catholic. He's from France, and you know, it's just there's no issue whatsoever. There's actually never been an issue. The only time there was an issue is when we were getting married, and his family wanted us to be, you know, to have a church ceremony as part of it, which we did. Of course, without a mass, since I'm not Catholic. But so that's the only time we've really had to you know, make any sort of compromise. The truth is that there are people in this world who love people. And when you're one of them, you don't look at people and say, well, now, what's your religion? You know, how are you and I different? You look for how we're in common, what we have in common. And my husband is that type of person. I'm that type of person. So if you look among our friends, yeah, you know, we have Jewish friends, we have Muslim friends, we have atheist friends, we have vegetarian friends. You know, that's not what we look for. We don't look for the differences.
You do have a funny account in the book about your husband inviting your entire extended family to Christmas one year, and he had made, like, really lavish preparations.
Well, my husband actually, the second year we're married, invited my parents, and he's very typically French in that way, that he loves to cook. You know, the food is a very serious part of his life, and he will spend literally days preparing a meal. And he had done that, and when my parents came, as I write about in the book, they actually ended up having an argument about something else unrelated to the meal, and this argument just went on through the whole meal. And they also weren't keen on necessarily trying everything my husband had made. You know, my husband, for example, had some foie gras, and once they found out what that was and how it's made, they were like, no, we're not touching that. So it was a disappointing meal, but it made for a good story.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest is Firozeh Dumas. Her new book is called Laughing Without an Accent, Adventures of an Iranian American at Home and Abroad. Let's go next to Ken in Plano. Hi, Ken.
Hi. You know, my father's 72 years old, and he, to this day, can tell you precisely what it felt like to live through World War II and the sort of the culture of fear living in San Diego that the Japanese were going to attack at any time. And I was wondering if your guest could comment on what it's been like for her to live through, you know, the sort of the Dick Cheney culture of fear, you know, that we've been through the last, since 9/11, 2001. What has it been like from her point of view? I know what it's been like for me, but there's an extra level, unfortunately, that extra level of prejudice, and I was wondering. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
You know, that's a really good question. Last month, I was on a book tour, and when I was in the Midwest, I was invited on a radio show, a very well-known radio show. And when I got there, under the pretext of talking about my book, the host used it as an example to remind everyone how much they should hate Iran, and it was this whole fear-mongering again. And when I tried to change the conversation towards my book and towards the fact that I write about humor, I don't write about religion or politics, he ended the interview. And I was so sad. I was so sad afterwards, and it took me truly days to process this because I thought, how did America come to this? You know, this was not the America that I encountered when I came to this country. And I don't know if you listeners remember, there used to be an ad in the 70s that showed a Native American standing looking at an area that was full of litter and then shedding a tear. And that's really what I felt like. It really pains me to see the racism in this country. I mean, one of the best things about America has been this compassion, this ability to welcome immigrants and to realize that those of us who come to America, we're actually leaving something behind because it's not working for us, and we're coming here willingly. So to be an Iranian in this country and then to be looked upon with suspicion, it's very painful. And I really hope that this turns around, that this is only a temporary state, because there's so much racism right now in this country, and it's like air pollution. You know, nobody benefits from it. We all pay for it.
You're really an interesting paradox because in some ways your experience is a lot like first-generation Americans who have immigrant parents, but you, in fact, are an immigrant. Your kids, on the other hand, are the first-generation Americans in your family. Do you look at them sometimes and think that they are somehow more American culturally than you are?
I think my children are definitely more American than I am. For one thing, you know, they grew up in an English-speaking country. But the one thing, though, that there's a lot of things that about them that I think are very immigrant. Like, for example, my son, who is 16, is very involved right now in politics and making sure that people get out there and vote. And, you know, he doesn't take the whole democracy thing for granted. And I don't think there are too many 16-year-olds out there who have that perspective.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Is he? Does he ask your parents for stories, or does he come to you to sort of want to understand what the rest of the world is like?
Well, believe me, you don't have to ask my parents for stories. They share them no matter what.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Rockwall and talk to Melissa. Hey, Melissa.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
Great, thank you.
I just wanted to thank you so much for having this delightful woman on your show today. I spent 15 years living in the Middle East and have a great fondness for the entire region and the people. And as a professor, I spend a great deal of time trying to convince my students that people of other cultures and other religions aren't demons and they don't have two heads. And hearing this, hearing her talk about her experiences takes me back to the time I spent in the Middle East, and they were wonderful years. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your call, Melissa.
Thank you. And, you know, thank you very much. One thing I do want to point out is my first book, Funny in Farsi, is currently used in schools throughout the country, junior highs, high schools, and colleges, precisely for what Melissa just said. And there's even a teacher's guide on my website, a free 9-page teacher's guide, precisely because we do need to be teaching our students about shared humanity. And you know, we want kids to be critical thinkers and to understand beyond headlines.
One thing that's really interesting in your work is the difference that we see between the way your father has assimilated and the way your mother has assimilated. It seems quite a bit less. Can you talk about why their sort of response in this country has been so different?
Well, my father is a lot more educated than my mother, which is very typical of people of their generation. My father not only went to college, he was a Fulbright scholar in America. He has advanced degrees. And my mother didn't finish high school. She got married, which, again, was very common for women of her generation.
Was their marriage arranged?
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, she could have said no. Her mm-hmm. family wasn't that strict, but she liked him, so. But it's not like they dated or that they actually chose each other. It was they were introduced for the purpose of getting married, mm-hmm. and they decided to.
But so in this country, your dad basically came in. He had a job. He had a place to go every day, and it was pretty right. easy for him, relatively speaking, to become part of the culture.
Whereas my mother, you know, my mother's window to this world was television, and she learned English from television. So in the early 70s, you know, her English, which she learned first of all, because she loved The Price is Right, she learned prices. You know, she didn't know how to really say a full sentence in English, but she knew that a coffee maker cost more or less than $19.99. But, you know, but still, TV plays such a big role today because my father's retired, and my parents were visiting me last month, and we were trying to decide where to go for dinner. And at one point, my dad said, well, what is it, deal or no deal? So that's his way of saying yes or no.
You know, it's almost scary, though, Firuze, because, like, such dolts get themselves on television.
Well, you know, you work for an intelligent radio station, so I'm going to have to definitely agree with you.
Well, and I should say I also have a television show, so I know from whence I speak. So are your how different is the experience for you as opposed to your siblings?
Well, I think my experience was easier because I came here when I was 7. My siblings were older. And the younger you are, obviously, the less prejudice you encounter. I mean, when I came here in second grade, the kids had been prepared by our teacher, Mrs. Sandberg. And she had told them, there's this new kid coming. She doesn't speak the language. You guys have to be nice to her. You have to include her in everything. And God bless Mrs. Sandberg and all the sensitive teachers out there because the kids did that. Mm-hmm. And you can do that with 7-year-olds. You can't necessarily do that with 16-year-olds.
Well, you write about the stark differences between school in Iran and school when you got to California.
Well, schools in pre-revolutionary Iran were very good. And if you look at the immigrants, the Iranian immigrants in America, you clearly see the results of that. It was a whole different experience. School was not for fun. School was where you went to learn. And, you know, our classrooms weren't filled with colorful posters. We had rows of desks. We had math drills on and on. We had hours of homework every day. That's what school was. And coming to America was such a shock because school here is there's so much play. You know, it's so fun, and there was no homework.
And so you would like your kids to have a taste of pre-revolutionary Iranian schools?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's very hard for me as a parent here because I know what kids are capable of. But, you know, that's a very loaded topic because you can't just have really schools that demand a lot without having parents who support that.
Well, I wonder about that and whether you've been able to separate for yourself what differences in the way that you might be inclined to raise your kids have to do with just who you are as an individual and have to do with having been raised partly in Iran.
Well, you know, one of the things I think is part of my upbringing, for example, is the whole you respect your elders concept. Because mm-hmm. I think that you know, with me growing up, I remember, I mean, to this day, that, you know, if I'm at a gathering and I don't say hello to anybody who's older than me, my parents will give me an eye.
Your parents will still come find you.
Believe me, I will hear about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do have to go up to each one of them and you know, look them in the eye and say, hi, how are you, and have a conversation with them. So those kinds of manners, I feel, are from my culture. And, you know, we're not, and I live in California, so it's a little more, everything's a little more relaxed out here. But I'm not very relaxed about things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's definitely my Iranian part. And it's something I've tried to pass on to my kids because I think that's really important.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to John in Dallas. Hi, John.
Hi, good afternoon. My understanding, both through my own research and through some friends who have their Iranian, is that the Iranian people in Iran are the most pro-American in the Middle East. That is, the population, you know, as opposed to a Saudi population or Jordanian population, are the most pro-American. And I'd like you to, you know, either verify that or, you know, challenge that. And if you can verify it, kind of expand on why that is. And then secondly, my understanding is that Los Angeles has the largest concentrating of Iranians outside of Tehran, and it's called Tehranjalis. And if you could kind of expand on that phenomenon.
You're absolutely right about both of those things. Iran is the most America-friendly country in the Middle East. It has been that way for many, many years. Now, the reason why you don't hear from Iranians in Iran speaking about America is that there's no freedom of speech in Iran. I mean, people can't even have a blog criticizing the Iranian president. But the Iranian people love Americans. And if you ever have a chance to talk to Americans who've been there, even recently, what they tell you over and over again is that the hospitality was overwhelming. And what they always say, what Iranians in Iran say to Americans is, we do not agree with your government, but we love the people.
So again, they're making the separation. They don't agree with the policies of the United States necessarily, but they do
right.
separate the difference between the two.
Exactly. And about the gentleman's second comment about Los Angeles, yes, there are 500,000 Iranians in Los Angeles, making it the largest population outside of Iran. It is called Tehranjalis. You will find some of the best Persian food anywhere in Los Angeles. And as somebody who came here when there were no Iranians, when I go to Los Angeles, I am still surprised. I mean, there are actually signs in Persian. There's entire neighborhoods where you have the Persian restaurant, you have the Persian supermarket, you have the Persian eye doctor. It's just, it really is another world to me. I mean, when we came here, one time we ran into another Iranian, one time only in the 2 years we were here, and it was, of course, at a mall. that's our natural habitat. And, it was like two polar bears meeting in Hawaii. We said, are you Iranian? We were amazed. And then we had them over the next week for dinner. So
when you have a family gathering, do your kids speak Persian?
They don't, but they understand Persian.
Mm-hmm. So they're comfortable if your parents are speaking and everything.
Right. Even my husband, God bless him, he took Persian lessons in college.
Mm-hmm.
So that was love.
It's a difficult language to learn, is it not?
It is, mainly because, we have different guttural sounds. I mean, we just have sounds you don't have in America, like ulbare is French. I mean, is frog,
mm-hmm.
In Persian. And it's a whole another, we write from right to left, so it's complicated.
Firuzeh Dumas is my guest. Her new book is called Laughing Without an Accent, Adventures of an Iranian American at Home and Abroad. Our phone number, if you'd like to join us, is 1-800-933-5372. The email address is think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults, offering summer escapes from the everyday. Short courses start in June. Curious? Details at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Firuzeh Dumas. Her new book is called Laughing Without an Accent, Adventures of an Iranian American at Home and Abroad. An email from Christopher asks if you've seen the Albert Brooks movie Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World.
No, I have not seen that movie.
Yeah, I think it's I understand it's a documentary, but I have not seen it either. So
I'm a typical parent. I'm about 12 years behind on all movies.
Yeah, I know. If it hasn't come on HBO, I haven't seen it in some time either. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Nick in Dallas. Hi, Nick.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay. I was wondering, has the author been back to Iran post-1978, and has she taken her family there in recent years, and how is she treated as an Americanized Iranian Muslim who is also very secular, as she said? How is that viewed by traditional Iranians?
Great question.
Well, I actually have not been back since, I think, did you say 1998 or?
He said 78.
78. No, the last time I was back was the summer before the revolution. And I was going to go back with my husband and children in the spring that September 11th ended up happening. So we postponed that. But my parents go back every year, and have lots of relatives there. Even though I have not been back, let me just say on behalf of all my relatives who go back on a regular basis, most Iranians are not really, even though Iranians in Iran are not religious. One thing that this Islamic, quote-unquote Islamic theocracy has done to religion is that it's really made people run away from it. And so people are so surprised, like the youth in Iran. I mean, there's a lot of parties going on. It is not a religious country.
The city where you were born, or the town, Abadan, is pretty close to the Iran-Iraq border. And in fact, right. It was destroyed largely in the war. Is that right?
It was.
Yeah. And so have your parents been back to that space specifically?
No, they haven't. And in fact, we had a friend who went to Abadan a few years ago and videotaped it and brought it back and showed the videotape to my father. And he halfway through had to stop it. My father said he just couldn't see it.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Farah in Tyler. Hi, Farah.
Hi, Chris. I want to thank you for, first when I saw about you, I said, oh, gosh, this very young girl, how she's going to do that. But my God, you have taken this program to a different level. And I am so, as a professional woman, I am very proud of you.
Oh, thank
you. My gender to be so wonderful. Another thing I wanted to tell your guest that everything she said, it is felt here, and I agree 100%. And it is really true that United States has changed last 34 years immensely. And on top of that, I want to tell you and share this with you, we are not divided by our religion. We are divided by our ignorance, and this is so disappointing for Iranians who are majority nearly all very well educated and have gone to greatest schools here, because we do appreciate greatly your higher education, you know, is second to none, you know.
Yeah, thank you so much for your call and for your compliments, Farah.
Oh, you are immense. I don't know how you are going to keep up with it, but as young as you are, you will.
Thank you so much. Did you want to comment on those comments?
No, I appreciate what she's saying. In fact, I was waiting for an Iranian to call. I thought, where are my people in Texas?
Oh, we have plenty of them.
By the way, I'm coming to Texas for the very first time this November.
Oh, you'll love it.
I'm looking for, I hope, I was just listening to the weather forecast in Texas, and it's kind of hot.
Well, November's gorgeous. It's okay. Sunny and usually pretty mild.
Chris, you promised me that.
Yeah,
so
I'll be
responsible.
So do you agree that it's an issue more of ignorance than of religion?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, when the Americans who I know who actually know Iranians, they're always amazed at how different Iranians actually are than the way we're portrayed. So, ignorance is the common enemy.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest is Firozeh Dumas. Her book is called Laughing Without an Accent, Adventures of an Iranian American at Home and Abroad. Let's go next to Arlington and talk to Renee. Hi, Renee.
Hi. Yeah, my husband's Iranian, and he takes my daughters to Iran every summer. And one of the more amusing kind of ways that they come back and tell me that Iranians embrace American culture is things like a mashala burger, which is basically a McDonald's. But and I've always amused at the and also really heartened by how much they really do embrace American culture, even in Iran now. And I was just wondering if your guest had any comment on that.
Oh, you know, absolutely. And you know, whenever my parents go back, they generally go back every year. All the conversations, everybody they meet on the street, everywhere, it's all about how they wish that they could come to America, because they want to pursue their own dreams. They all have business ideas, and they want to come in the land of freedom. They want to be able to hold hands with someone in the street if they want. So, I mean, I cannot emphasize that enough, how much Iranians in Iran love America and Americans. They just don't agree with the government here.
Are there things that your parents do as immigrants to this country that you worry that the people sort of outside Iranian culture, people who are native-born Americans, won't properly understand?
Well, aside from their English?
Well, yeah, I just mean, you know, gestures that your parents make seem very natural to them.
Right. Well, for example, one thing, and I'm always telling my parents about this, my parents tend to be very friendly. And, they have grandkids whom they love. And whenever they see a child similar age to one of their grandkids, you know, they will go up to the parents and start telling them, oh, you know, I have, you know, grandchildren. And sometimes I think Americans kind of look at them like, who are these people? So there's that different issue of boundaries.
Mm-hmm. And your kids get that, though. They love, you write about the fact that at first they were sort of overwhelmed when there would be a big family gathering, and now they get it.
Well, you know, my family gatherings involve a lot of kissing and, you know, the pinching of cheeks and, you know, when you're a, you know, a 5, 6, 7 year old kid, you're raised in America, and you go to this Iranian gathering, and all these people who you don't know but who know you are grabbing you and kissing you, it can definitely be overwhelming.
And apparently, there's a lot of talk about velour at these family gatherings.
Well, one of the stories I write about this, my father and his brothers and some of my cousins got on this velour sweatsuit kick, and they just, you know, were buying more and more and more. And my father still wears them. I mean, this is a trend that I think started in the 80s, and he has just hung on to this. So.
And he'll call you and say, "Go to the Costco where you are and look for my size."
Exactly, and, which I refuse to do because he already has too many.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to Jerry in Dallas. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, thank you.
I want to say that I have a number of friends from the Iranian community now. I live in Plano, and one of the gyms that I go to, and I became friendly with many men and women there, and everything you're saying is true. And in fact, they email me some unbelievable pictures of the city, and I've even managed to email those to some of my more conservative friends who have a different take of different things, and they've even seemed to have been a little enlightened. Also, somebody from Iran actually turned me on to green tea instead of coffee, and it's been a tremendous help for me. So anyway, I've just had nothing but positive stuff so far.
Great.
Well, I wanted to share that with you.
Thank you for building bridges by forwarding those pictures.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Arlington, where we'll speak with Pete. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
You know, some of the greatest comedians in this country, the role they've played is to make people think seriously by first making them laugh so it's easier for them to think. It's been said that music is a universal language, but I think the same thing can be said about humor. And so I'm wondering if your guest would comment on whether or not humor as entertainment and as philosophy, how that's accepted in Iran as it is in this country. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I agree with everything you said. Humor is a bridge. And whenever I have author events, one of the things I love is I get this huge cross-section of the population. I get people of all ages, of all backgrounds. And that's because humor definitely unites. And I am a humorist. And I do use humor to talk about shared humanity. But it is, people do laugh first, and then they think. And part of the reason why my first book, Funny in Farsi, is used in school so much is because the kids read it and they laugh out loud, but they also learn. And humor plays a huge role in Iran. I mean, Iranians, I don't think a day goes by when the average Iranian doesn't try to crack a joke about something. So it's a survival mechanism.
Have you discovered that people who have Iranian blood respond to different things in your books than people who don't?
Well, people who have any Iranian blood swear to me that I wrote their book. I can't tell you how many Iranians say, if I sat down and wrote a book, this is the book I would write.
Wow.
So, but then again, I mean, I generally get that from a lot of people, even like these like third generation Minnesotans, because I think it does go back to families or families.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Byron in Dallas. Hi, Byron.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. I haven't read the book. I'm anxious to read it. I'm an Iranian. I came here, I guess, I went to London in 1977, and last time I was in Iran was the summer before the revolution. And I agree with a lot of things Firuza is saying, and also I just want to make a comment. Somebody called earlier about the experience, post 9/11 experience. I didn't find that half as bad as the experience I went through during the hostage crisis. Now, as a whole, as a community, Iranians were under a lot of, stress and subjected to prejudice, but personally, I didn't find too much of that going on with myself, and one of the reasons is just like you were saying, the sense of humor helped a lot, and I think the way you conduct yourself is very important. You know, if you walk around with a chip on your shoulder, that's the kind of attitude you're going to get back.
That's an interesting point. Thank you so much for your call.
You know, I have to say that, you know, during the hostage situation, we lived in a community where people knew us, and nobody ever directed anything towards us. But when you have songs playing on the radio that are saying, you know, bomb Iran, and you have T-shirts and bumper stickers that say, we play cowboys and Iranians, and, you know, wanted Iranians for target practice, you know, it's, even though it may not be directed directly towards every Iranian, it's, you know, it's out there.
I wonder if you've given any thought to the advantages granted to you by the fact that you don't have a discernible accent when you speak American English.
Oh, I talk about that a lot. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And in fact, when I was in middle school, I changed my name for a while to an American name. And because I had an American name and I spoke with an accent, without an accent, is when people would say things about Iran in front of me, not realizing that I am from Iran. And it was a very revealing part of my life. It was, you know, it was an ugly part of my life, because it's painful to hear someone say something racist about your country, not realizing that person was racist at all, and knowing they would have never said that in front of you had they thought that you are from that country.
That's got to be a really scary experience. And I would have to wonder if you walk around now with your real name, wondering still if you were to sort of conceal that again, who would reveal themselves to be racist?
Right. And there's a lot of it now. I mean, I think with President Ahmadinejad, like every time he opens his mouth, you know, he says things that people really react to, and you know, in this country, and they don't really understand that he's speaking on his own behalf. So, yeah, no, I know there's a lot of racism right now against Iranians, and I hope that changes.
Do you think that your kids will spend their adulthood in a better America than we have right now?
I hope so. Boy, I really, really hope so. That's a goal we should all aim for.
Mm-hmm. Are issues of racism something that they think about a lot, or is it something that they just assume will not be a problem for them?
No, they think about it a lot, because it's something, for example, when there's been instances where we've been places with my father, for example. My father has a very thick Persian accent, and he'll ask something, and he gets a different reaction than I get when I ask for the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my children have noticed that.
Yeah, that's got to be an uncomfortable thing to try and explain to them, because there's no good explanation, is there?
No, there isn't.
Yeah.
There isn't.
So in writing the books, as you continue to find stories in your life, what is your sort of guiding principle as you're putting all these together?
Well, I started out actually writing for my children, and my intention originally was not to get published, but was to simply pass on my stories to them. My goal is always to teach something. And it just so happens that I'm a humorist, so my stories tend to be entertaining. But underneath it all, I hope that people learn something from them. That's always been my goal.
Firozeh Dumont's new memoir is called Laughing Without an Accent, Adventures of an Iranian American at Home and Abroad. Her first book is called Funny in Farsi. Firozeh, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.